Well, hope you're all getting through the home stretch and nobody's going to sleep. I'm known to put people to sleep, so go get your coffee now. No, I'm just kidding. So if you can picture me 62 pounds less than what I am right now. I weigh 160 pounds. I'm the weight that I was before I got sick. And so if you picture me 62 pounds less, pale as a ghost, bedridden, oxygen lines, that was me before I met Dr. Cowden. Now, that's kind of a worst-case scenario for Lyme disease. I gradually, because I was misdiagnosed, I gradually got worse and worse. And so by the time I saw Dr. Cowden, I was already, you know, in pretty bad shape. And so I met Dr. Cowden in 2003 in a Lyme disease pilot study in Dallas, Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area. And because of that study, we had originated what's become known as the Cowden Protocol. So it was very fortuitous for me to be a part of that early on. Now, Lyme disease is not just Lyme disease. Part of the problem within the Lyme disease communities is that people are obsessed with Borrelia burgdorferi as the cause of Lyme disease. The truth is, by the time you have chronic Lyme disease, there are many, many things going wrong. I personally believe there are areas of the country where people, Lyme is pandemic, 100% of the population has been exposed in those areas because they pull hundreds of ticks off themselves during the year. They get seed ticks on them. These ticks, you know, can get all over the body. And essentially, those people are immune to the Lyme disease in those places. The people who are not immune, who have other things going on, are the ones that develop chronic Lyme disease. So I like to look at health as a practitioner. Really, you can divide it up into two categories. You have treatment and therapy designed to intervene and help a sick person to recover their health, which is absolutely critical, and it's very lacking in our country these days. But you know, lifestyle choices are things that we as individuals can do to prevent ourselves from getting sick, and they become even more important after you get sick. And the four key things are, as you've heard many of the speakers speaking about, are exercise, positive mental outlook, sleep, diet, and nutrition. Now, how do you take care of these things if you can't sleep because of your illness, you're in too much pain, you can't eat because you can't digest, you certainly don't have a positive mental outlook, and you're unable to exercise because you're too weak. And this is the condition that people are often in. By the time they get to us, first they have some cracks in the pillars, and then this is what they look like oftentimes with chronic Lyme disease. And this applies to cancer and applies to many other chronic diseases, and the same things apply as well. So the goal, putting Borrelia burgdorferi into remission, again, it's not a good thing to be overly obsessed about this. I mean, it's a very nasty bacteria. There's no question about it. But by the time a person has this, their terrain is in such bad shape that they have multiple chronic infections and multiple other problems going on. If you hear someone say, I have Lyme, I've been diagnosed with Lyme, but I don't have any co-infections, then you're talking to somebody that knows nothing about Lyme disease. Because it's, by the time it becomes chronic, you do have co-infections. It's just a matter of what co-infections do you have. Dr. Cowden likes to use an illustration, and I'll borrow it. So let's say you have a city, and in this city, all the workers go on strike. They stop taking out the garbage. People start taking the garbage out, put it on their curbs, and you know, there are problems, and then the garbage just gets worse. Then you have rat and mice infestation, roaches, flies. The city leaders get together, they hold a meeting. We need more exterminators. Well, this is the modern treatment for Lyme disease. Exterminate the microbe, but don't think about the terrain at all. So you need to take the garbage out and get the body cleaned up before you're able to cope with Lyme disease. These are some of the common Lyme disease co-infections that are commonly tested for. They're the superstar co-infections. Unfortunately, there are many that are not tested for that people have. So as far as pillars of health, diet and nutrition, there's been a lot of talk about that, how you can prevent your patients from sabotaging their recovery with poor diet choice. We all know there's no diet that suits everyone. Generally speaking, a vegan, low-fat diet is very bad for people with Lyme disease. Why is it a mistake to limit certain macronutrients long-term in an attempt to starve infections? Parasites like Entamoeba histolytica thrive on animal protein. Protomyxoa rheumatica, common in Lyme disease, thrives on fats and oils. Candida albicans thrives on carbohydrates. So, to starve all your bugs, all you have to do is stop eating all proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. Right. But we do see people, now, it is true, if you have a fungal problem, you have to limit carbohydrates. There is no question about it. It's like pouring gasoline on a fire while you're trying to put it out. Some of these other infections, people, Entamoeba histolytica, if they eat animal protein, they might, red meat, they might have bloody stool for a week. So you can't do that, clearly. But you need to, these should be short term. So the diet should really be to strengthen your body, not to address a bug primarily, long term that is. Some general guidelines for healthy eating: avoid all processed food, junk foods, fast food, gluten, sugar, dairy products, GMO, mercury-laden fish and seafood, and of course, foods that you're allergic to. Do consume partly raw, organic, nutrient-dense whole foods, such as green leafy vegetables, fruits, berries, nuts, and seeds. Different diet, you know, paleo tends to work really good if you've got gut problems. Next slide here. I like, for most chronic illness, the principles of Gerson therapy. And this is where we talked about, you know, how lifestyle is something it's something that you do for yourself, something that your doctor can't do. They can't go home with you and force food down your throat. What you eat, your choices, exercise, sleep are things that you're empowered to do by yourself. Now, Gerson therapy is typically known as done in a clinical environment, but Gerson therapy is an example of the blending of the lines between lifestyle and therapy, because Gerson is a therapy, but it's essentially flooding the body with nutrients. And when you have a sick body, it's, again, you go back to the illustration of the exterminators trying to kill the roaches and the flies and the mice and everything. You know, you don't need more toxins. You need to get rid of the garbage. Well, Gerson therapy detoxifies and floods the body with nutrients. You're just not going to go wrong with a sick body when you flood the body with nutrients. It can be an important step to recovery from any illness. It's more commonly known with cancer. The Gerson diet is very rich in starch and low fat. It's got a lot of oats and things like that. I don't think the diet itself is good for Lyme disease, because most people with Lyme disease have too many gut problems. But the juicing principle is quite awesome. People can, you know, with just a little bit of effort, a juicer that you're comfortable with using, you can drink 12 to 13 glasses of organic juice a day with very little money. So what you do is go to Costco and get things like organic carrots and celery and squash and cabbage. If you're going to use things like cabbage, you want to steam them just slightly before you juice them, because it interferes with thyroid function. So practical ways to implement the principles of flooding the body with nutrition like Gerson therapy. I like to combine one root vegetable, let's say like a carrot, with celery, with a fruit like an organic apple. And you're thinking, well, that's a lot of sugar. But the way Gerson therapy works is you drink 8 ounces every hour. So you can get up in the morning, you can prepare essentially 3 quarts of juice, and you drink 8 ounces, set a timer, and for the next 12 doses, you have the juice in your refrigerator. We give people a handout on how to preserve the juice. We put like liquid vitamin C and antioxidants into it, stir it all together so it's preserved, so you don't have to juice every hour. That is a way that you can essentially get yourself way up and your progress towards recovering from any chronic illness. It certainly applies to cancer. This is not a replacement for Gerson therapy, and this is not a method to do Gerson therapy. I learned about juicing and other things in the therapy, like coffee enemas and enzymes. I learned it from Sherry Rogers, honestly, from her books. And then later I started hearing about Gerson, and I realized that Max Gerson was the genius that, you know, had put this all together in the 20s and 30s. Green smoothies, things like kale, collard, spinach, they don't juice very well. So I preserve these things for using with a high-speed blender like a Vitamix, dark green leafy vegetables. Berries also render very little juice, so I take some organic fresh berries and throw them in, and the acids help to release the alkaline minerals. When it comes to diet, as practitioners, one of the things we try to do is keep people from sabotaging their recovery as they are trying to get well. And people say they never eat sugar, but on the other hand, they do eat agave nectar, honey, maple syrup, molasses, brown rice syrup, sucanat, coconuts. So you see, sugar is very bad for your recovery, and it doesn't matter what plant you're extracting it from. Refined sugar is very bad for your health. Exercise and epigenetics. With chronic illness, again, sometimes it takes a practitioner first to get someone like a chronic Lyme patient to a place where they can actually exercise. Once you have, you know, done the things that allows a person to exercise on a regular basis, you want to implement this in a way that don't, I guess if I have one point, it's don't wait until you're well to exercise, because it doesn't work that way. It's just too important to your overall health and recovery. If you had to be a mouse, which mouse would you rather be? This is the Tarnopolsky mice. And these mice had a genetic defect that caused premature aging. So they had three groups of mice. They had control mice, healthy mice. They had two groups of genetically defective mice who had premature aging. And they put the healthy-looking mice on tiny mouse treadmills. And they had them run 30 minutes three times a week. And that's the only difference in these mice. So it prevented genetic expression of disease. And there's a lot of talk these days about epigenetics, that it's not simply a matter of where you did you draw the short straw, did you get dealt a bad hand with genetics. It's about which genes express themselves, and exercise has a big role in that. Create different outlets for exercise. Honestly, I believe that with chronic Lyme disease and a lot of chronic degenerative conditions, that long-duration cardio is not ideal. We're talking people who love to run long distance or triathlons and that kind of thing. I've never been a triathlete, but I used to run fairly long distance, and I came to realize it's really not the best for your health. It puts your body in a catabolic state. You break down, and people who are chronically ill, they need to regenerate and build. A little bit of cardio, of course, is good. We're implementing EWOT, exercise with oxygen treatment, which some of the practitioners spoke about yesterday. It's phenomenal. EWOT is really, really good. But again, you don't make that the cardio and aerobic exercise your only exercise. Do strength training as well. As far as sleep, oftentimes when you correct other things, people will start to sleep better. There's no question about it. But they need a little bit of help at times. Nutramedix, Amantia, and Babuna are great. Cetitol, pure encapsulations. Some of these, you can purchase these online. Now, with chronic illness, part of the problem with exercise tolerance and also with sleep is that people have what's called an inverted metabolism. We see this all the time, that people wake up very, very late in the day. They're exhausted. They seem to get their best sleep in the morning. And then at midnight, they're up and they finally have some energy. And so this is a reverse cortical hormone or adrenal cortical hormone output. And unfortunately, it's lifestyle related as well. So the longer you stay up at night and miss that deep sleep that you get in the morning, the more likely you are to have a profile like this, which is very unhealthy. As far as positive mental outlook, of course, there's endless things you can do. I like Dr. Seligman's work, learned optimism, authentic happiness. When people come in and they're just very, clearly very depressed and clinically depressed, they're not going to do the work to recover, because a person with clinical depression doesn't care. So if you combine a chronic illness with clinical depression, it's really a recipe for failure. So you have to, I like Dr. Seligman's website. It's authentichappiness.org. Being a positive psychology leader, he tests. He has a test called the happiness scale or the general happiness scale, happiness intake. He's changed the names a few times, I think, but you can rule out depression, honestly, with those self-tests on his website. Now, with chronic Lyme disease, we see performance anxiety. I know that this is strongly disagreed with within the Lyme community, but I see a high-stress personality over and over again. People are, yes, I was valedictorian. I was an ultra-marathoner. I set a world record for a deadlift. They're doing all these amazing things. So we're talking about self-driven people. Performance anxiety and prolonged hypervigilant, you could call it a fancy name for stress. Brain begins to dysfunction due to accumulating toxicity, inflammation, neurochemical imbalances, interruption of delta sleep, lack of growth hormone output. And this is called causal chain. This is how steps happen as you develop into chronic illness. It's not meant to be a complete, total list of causal chain into Lyme disease, but it's fairly accurate most of the time. The body becomes catabolic, can't regenerate itself. That's when everything begins to go wrong. The causal chain on the middle chart goes left to right. Endocrine dysfunction, thyroid, adrenal, digestive problems, dysbiosis, leaky gut, liver, kidney toxicity. We did 5 case studies. The goal was some natural strategies that were used. Complete 1 mucoid lining cleanse early on. Eat an unprocessed diet. Began rebuilding damaged gut flora. Repair the mucosal integrity of the gut. We detoxified the liver with coffee enemas, liver gallbladder flushes. Again, we're talking about taking out the garbage. Remember the city that's infested with pests because of the garbage? And, they hire crack mouse snipers to go shoot the mice. No, we don't need that. You have to take out the garbage first. A comprehensive electrodermal screening was used. Adaptogenic herbs. Dr. Cowden was talking about laser energetic detoxification. Can't get into that much. We've got a couple of videos on YouTube and also information on our website as well. Holistic methods to assist with gut healing. The mucoid lining is a rubbery lining that gets into the small intestine and inhibits absorption. It's because Dr. Cowden explains it better than I do, but the gut secretes a lot of mucus. We have fiber in our food. It becomes like paper mache in the gut. This is in the small intestine, it's not in the colon. This is why it's generally laughed at by the medical community because they do countless colonoscopies. Well, it's in the small intestine, this lining, and I've had people, as they did this cleanse, take out, it comes out a section at a time. I had one woman said she had 17 feet came out, another woman said 18 feet came out. Honestly, their health improved drastically in the 6 months following that. They were both chronically ill. You can't have 17 feet of mucoid lining in a 4-foot colon. So after the mucoid lining is gone and your absorption has improved, support the growth of beneficial bacteria with prebiotics, fermented foods, fermented prebiotics. A new thing we're doing is fermenting chia seeds, where we take chia seeds, we put actually some organic sugar in there, good probiotic supplement, put it in the yogurt maker, and you ferment it until all the sugar is gone and it's acidic. That works very well. Liver support and detoxification. We use electrodermal screening to choose herbal liver support as well as phase 1 and phase 2 liver detox. There was one of the presentations yesterday, they were talking about mercury retentive people. Why do some people retain mercury and other metals and biotoxins and chemicals and glycophosphates and all the things that are making people sick? Well, oftentimes it's phase 2 detoxification in the liver and other cells of the body. This is the conjugation phase. It's where a nutrient binds to the toxin, the mercury. It goes into the bile and out with a bowel movement, or it's released into the bloodstream to be cleared by the kidneys. Well, these are nutrient-driven detox pathways. Every time you detox the molecule of pesticide or the mercury, the nutrient comes out also. Don't replenish those nutrients, detoxification stops. Wait, let me go back here. This little thing at the top that looks like a garlic butter, that's not. That is homemade glutathione cream. So an associate of mine and I have figured out how to take fats like shea butter, cocoa butter, kapuka butter, mix it in with a liquid oil, and saturate it with glutathione so that one teaspoon of this cream contains 2.5 grams of glutathione. Now, that's, if you know about glutathione, if you've ever done it in IV, that's the equivalent of 6 IVs of glutathione and 1 teaspoon of glutathione. You apply it topically anywhere, but you have to be very careful. I gave it to a woman with chronic fatigue for the last 4 years, an Asian woman, 40 years old, and she put on a quarter teaspoon. 45 minutes later, she was throwing up in the parking lot. Her mother came and got me. I said, well, apparently a quarter teaspoon is too much for you. Just goes to show, I mean, we do practice, let's face it. Glutathione will not hurt you. That's one of the good things, but it can detoxify you too fast. You can get liposomal cream right now, but we're in the process of, I'll give you some contact information at the end of this. We are starting to produce it, but it's not up and running yet. Most creams are liposomal, and you don't need liposomal cream because liposomals for glutathione are to protect the glutathione from pepsin in the stomach because glutathione is a peptide. So you can get much more into just straight fat-based cream. Liver support and detoxification. Once you've got all these nutrients on board, coffee enemas are great. They do increase glutathione, but again, you know, glutathione increases, it conjugates toxins and pulls them out. But in order for glutathione to work, you have to have the base nutrients to produce it. But a coffee enema will speed up that process. The caffeine goes in to the sigmoid colon, to the descending colon, goes into these veins here and into the liver, and boom, the liver produces glutathione and detoxifies. One of the overlooked things with chronic Lyme disease and chronic fatigue, I hardly ever see anyone doing lymphatic drainage. And it's critical to pushing toxins. You know, you start killing Lyme and co-infections, you're going to have microbial carcasses, fragments. You need to get that out of the lymphatic system and tissue. And so we have a little YouTube video that shows manual lymphatic drainage. Electrodermal screening, it's been talked about. I won't get into that. We don't really have time. It's how we create protocols without just guessing in the dark. This is a general guideline that was followed for people as far as how to take the products that they took with pulsing. And pulsing is extremely important for encouraging microbes to come out of cyst form and come out of their invulnerable form into the vulnerable form that you can treat. Use adaptogenic herbals. I made this rather crude-looking photo here. This is adaptogenic herbs that we blended. We put vodka in, and we make our own extract. Honestly, I don't do it anymore because it's too messy and it's too time-consuming. But for those who are do-it-yourselfers, it's something you can do. But you still need to know which herbs are really going to support you and strengthen you before you make your own. And there's 32 ounces in that quart, and this is 1 ounce bottle. So clearly you get quite a bit more. But they're not as powerful as commercial extracts. Laser energetic detoxification, it combines homeopathy with a cold laser shined onto acupuncture points on the body, and also an infrared light shined through a homeopathic vial, and that's into areas of toxic focus. And that's all done through electrodermal screening as well. Ozone sauna is something that we use for heavy metal detoxification. I took 6 samples. See the gray spots on the towels? Those are heavy metals that people sweated out. And I took 6 samples. I cut out little squares of gray spotted towel, and I took a control sample from the corner of the towel that was white, and I sent it to Doctor's Data Lab. And I said, I want to see how many toxic metals are in that spot, because they're in there naked. It's coming out of their body, clearly. This is the baseline. 0 is the control sample. Everything that's elevated above control was the amount of toxic metals that they sweated out on the towel doing ozone sauna. 3 of the samples were elevated in arsenic. All 6 were elevated in cadmium. 1 was elevated 75 times above control in cadmium. Lead elevated in all six samples, nickels in all six samples, uranium in all six samples, tin in five. Bismuth was elevated. One woman had 165 times the amount of bismuth on the towel. She had taken a lot of Pepto-Bismol. Copper was elevated. Aluminum, not so much. You just can't sweat aluminum out that well. I prefer to use spring water, Fiji water. Silica really pulls aluminum out of the body very well. You can take Biosil, the supplement, but just not drinking purified water, drinking regular water with healthy amount of minerals in it will help get the aluminum out of your body. These are some case studies. I'm almost out of time here, so I'm going to flip through them quickly. But all these people experienced some dramatic improvement in their health. And of course, no one did the same thing. Everybody did something different. And that's because we're all totally unique. You may have an infectious load, but you have different infections. You may have a toxic load, but you have different toxins. You may have genetic SNPs, but you have different genetic SNPs. You may have weaknesses in certain detox pathways, but you have different detoxification weaknesses. Many of the modalities shown here today in this presentation are well-known and widely used. Nothing really that groundbreaking. They represent some old and some new therapeutic methods to restore homeostasis and heal from the devastation of Lyme disease. The ultimate goal is for those who have used such therapeutic tools to recover their health and be able to discontinue them. Maybe a little bit of maintenance, of course. Many of these things are very good for you. Don't have to stop them completely. Go back to eating garbage. I think that nobody really does that who learns the lessons of chronic illness. If they're after, they make healthy lifestyle choices in the area of the four pillars of health, diet, exercise, sleeping patterns, and mental well-being, they can attain the four pillars of health rebuild. Thank you very much for letting me speak to you.